Hey, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Seriously Risky Business podcast. My name is Patrick Gray, and Seriously Risky Biz is the podcast we do every week where Tom Uren and I, we sit down, we edit his weekly Seriously Risky Business newsletter, and then we do this podcast to talk about what we've all learned today. G'day, Tom. How's it going?
Good, mate. How are you?
Good. And we'd just like to say thanks to this week's sponsor, Nucleus Security. They've sponsored all of the work going into the Risky Business News and Seriously Risky Business newsletters and all of that. So big thanks to them. And also a big shout out to the Hewlett Foundation's Cyber Initiative, which supports the work that Tom does here with us at Risky Biz HQ. Now, Tom, you covered two things this week in great detail. We're going to talk about both of them. One of them was the raid on the MEK's, refugee camp based in Albania. That's pretty interesting stuff. But the first thing we're going to talk about, and the thing that you spent most of your time on this week, was really looking at this Chinese cyber espionage campaign that was targeting Barracuda email security gateways. And this was a really interesting edit session this morning because we really had to sit down and go, okay, this thing feels like it's out of bounds, but trying to put your finger on exactly why was actually a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah, so when I first picked up this story, it seemed like it was very similar to the Microsoft Hafnium mass exploitation of Exchange, in that it seemed like the group got discovered and then it accelerated. So the Barracuda group got busted and then they accelerated their activities. And so I reached out to Mandiant and said, were they exploiting more stuff? So it's kind of like the, you get busted, let's just expand massively, make hay while the sun shines till it gets
fixed. Expand our footprints, own more devices. But And that's what I thought as well. And that's what I said on the weekly show yesterday. But it turns out that that's actually wrong.
Yeah. So in this case, Mandiant said that they didn't exploit more things, they just were more aggressive on the devices they were already on. So they were,
I mean, just an idea here, just an idea, Tom, but maybe in their report they should have been more specific than saying the threat actor pivoted to doing quote-unquote high-frequency operations, because we don't know what that means. But
yes,
I'm glad you were able to get a good answer out of them, but
Yeah. So when you reread it knowing that's what they're saying, it's clear.
Yes.
When you don't know what they're saying, it's not clear.
I mean, I am wearing my editor hat today, so I do have to tell them off a little bit for that. That was clear as mud.
Yes.
But anyway,
yes.
So that was interesting. I mean, but essentially what it means is that, like, once they realized that their campaign had been discovered, they actually started deploying new malware and, like, bedding into those devices and really getting in there good.
Yeah, digging in.
Yeah.
And in some, they would move laterally. And presumably they'd set up shop elsewhere. And so we had an interesting discussion about that. I think your point, I thought, was interesting, that the reason they would deploy more malware is because they're on many, many devices and they can't move laterally on every single network, which is going to be different. And so they're doing the simplest thing they can at scale to dig in. And the end result is that Barracuda says, we can't guarantee those devices are safe anymore. You're going to have to throw them away and we'll give you a new one. And my original take was this is out of bounds because it's indiscriminate. And this is more tightly scoped, I guess.
So you're saying it's not indiscriminate?
Well, I'm not saying it's not indiscriminate. What I'm saying is that it still felt to me that it was what a Western agency would consider out of bounds or not the done thing. But it really took us a long time to figure out exactly why that was. So I'd written this piece and we had this long back and forth about, well, you know, Western agencies also get into devices and embed themselves deeply. And I think the place I came down on is, yes, Western agencies do that, but they have the, I want to say, the decency to, when they get busted, they pretend to back away and then they'll come back another day, and they don't escalate so that the people who own the devices have to throw them away.
Yeah.
So it feels like a very aggressive behavior that doesn't end up in a good place.
I think this is really it too, because, like, it was all like a penny dropping for us, like, in realizing why this felt weird. And it's because it was a response, right? It was like, oh no, we've been caught. Quickly, let's get so far into these devices that the only solution for these people is going to be to throw them away, and that'll buy us some time, which is just causing a lot of unnecessary drama. Because, you know, they're going to get evicted from most of those places. So the benefit to them isn't going to be that huge, but the cost to their targets is going to be pretty substantial.
Yeah, and I think actually the benefit to them is actually reduced as well. So the I think the Western approach would be, okay, we'll have a plan to bed ourselves really deep into these networks because we care about them. And let's do that from the beginning. And let's do that in a really quiet way so that when we get busted, we'll appear to disappear and then we'll come back another day. And then they would have a long-term access. They wouldn't cause all this drama. The collateral damage would be less. And so that, to me, seems like the difference in approach. So,
well, the collateral damage is only less because the people who are impacted don't know that they're impacted. And that's what makes this one such an interesting one to analyze, is that what we keep coming back to is that what the Chinese are most guilty of here is bad manners.
Yeah, pretty much. I think so. And it's a humorous way to describe it, but I think also at the same time it reflects a kind of fundamental difference in the way you approach things. And because it feels kind of, in a way, it feels like the big guy ganging up on the little guy, or the, you know, the big bully ganging up on the little person. That, you know, if it's Ministry of Defense or the Department of Defense and the Chinese are doing this kind of back and forth, that's like, okay, that's pretty aggressive. But we understand that we're the big monk, big gorilla. We can handle ourselves. Fair's fair. We just have to fight back harder. But when it becomes private companies that are in that situation or private organizations,
and the type of private organizations that are running Barracuda email security gateways as well, which you can't imagine are going to be like, you know, big, really well funded enterprises.
Yeah, that just sort of has this sense of unfairness, and I think if you had lawyers looking at this from the beginning, they would go, well, don't do that because we don't want to impose unnecessary harm to people if we can avoid it. Mm. It's like not the total thing, but by changing your operation from the beginning, you could avoid that. So let's do that.
Yeah.
Or minimize the risk, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, one interesting thing here, though, right, is you spoke a little bit about Hafnium, right? And this is the 2021, you know, when the Chinese Hafnium crew went absolutely wild with exchange exploits and owned, like, what was it, like hundreds of thousands of servers, yeah, and just put unsecured web shells all over them. And then, you know, subsequently criminals were able to exploit those web shells to gain access to the servers. And it was just, you know, I mean, I kind of feel like all of those exchange boxes were probably going to get rinsed one way or the other anyway. But, you know, a state actor shouldn't be doing that sort of thing, right? Like, that one was pretty clearly out of bounds, and there was a huge diplomatic response to that. And the United States and a bunch of its allies put out very sternly worded statements and whatnot. You know, probably something similar is going to wind up happening here. Like, you and I have both talk to various people around the place who say that this one is a pretty big deal and is seen as a pretty big deal by governments. But one does wonder what, you know, how effective it is to just issue sternly worded statements when stuff like this happens.
So my initial thought was perhaps this incident indicates that those denouncements, official attributions, worked in that it was less bad than the Hafnium.
I mean, sure, when you compare it to that, I mean, it's definitely tightly controlled compared to owning every single exchange box on the world and putting a, you know, backdoor insecure web shell on them. I mean, sure, I'll give you that.
Yeah, but I think the thing is that it's also, and you pointed this out to me, is also there's technical constraints on how far they could have gone. And also they had a secret approach. It was a covert.
They were trying to do it without being detected. Yeah. And I mean, it's like, I think the difference was, yeah, that exchange bug was like known by that point, which is why they were just burning it and just using it to harvest access wherever they could. Like, I do feel like there are some technical differences that come into it here.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, having thought about it a bit more, I'm not clear at all that it would have made any difference. So I think, you know, perhaps this was more targeted in that they seem to have gone after actual targets rather than just everyone. And they seem to have been trying to operate quietly. until they were busted, and then they kind of flip a switch to be a lot more aggressive. So what was the question?
The question was, is a sternly worded diplomatic response going to work? And probably not, is
probably
where we arrived.
So what did occur to me, though, is that in the aftermath of the surveillance balloon, the US briefed a whole lot of embassies about the PRC's broader surveillance program, balloon surveillance program. And apparently that really irked the Chinese. And so my only thought is that if it really irks them, if you want to deter things, perhaps that's the thing to do when you find, you know, things you want to complain about.
Well, I mean, you made this point in the newsletter, right? Which is that when you call out China for stuff like this, they just go, it's all lies and America is the biggest cyber spy in the world. And then they just bat it away with that, right? Like, it doesn't hurt them. They can just accuse the West of hypocrisy and move on. Whereas, you know, if the United States were to give detailed briefings to all of its allies about a whole bunch of APT crews operating out of China, I imagine that would annoy them in a way that a sternly worded, you know, statement wouldn't.
I think both are reflective of the need to make friends and influence people. And so the reason the denouncement works is because it indicates that the US has managed to get people on board. And so publicly it bats it off. I still think it hurts. I think the briefing is faster and it's also less formal. And it also lets you sort of foreshadow the denouncement that's coming. So I think it's kind of an additive effect. So both China and the US right now want to strengthen alliances and influence people who are kind of sitting on the fence, or influence countries who are sitting on the fence. And so I think these kinds of incidents are opportunities where you get to talk about something in particular and say, here's why I think this is wrong, and here's why I think you should be cautious about the PRC's operations. Yeah. And it's kind of an entry point into a bigger discussion about, here's a reason you should be a friend with us instead of with them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, State Department level activities around this sort of thing could probably be more effective than just, you know, media releases, I guess, is where you're coming from. I agree with you. Totally.
Yeah. And I think it's always nice to have something in particular to talk about that's at least a bit different.
Yeah. I mean, you could even use it with maybe some of those countries that you aren't super close to but would like to be.
Yeah.
I mean, China's doing so much with Belt and Road and they're surveilling absolutely everyone. And the idea that the United States, which would be aware of a lot of Chinese targeting of some of these countries, could come out and say, oh, here's a bunch of systems you could go look at. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. But yeah, certainly there are certainly ways to annoy China.
Yeah. So Mandia got telemetry from Barracuda. So as part of the incident response. So I think they'd have a very good idea of all the devices.
Oh, but I mean, you can start talking about stuff that other Chinese APTs are doing.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah. That
in response to this, you can go burn like five of their crews.
Yeah. Well,
if you have the insight, if you actually have the intelligence to share.
Yeah. Well, I think the Barracuda incident gives you something to hang that discussion off. Like, here's a list. Oh, and by the way, here's some other stuff we thought we'd share since we're talking about this right now.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, food for thought. That's something to think about. Now we're going to talk quickly. I mean, you know, we spoke about this on the weekly show with Adam yesterday as well. But, you know, the Albanian authorities had to raid the camp belonging to the MEK. Now, the MEK is like an exiled Iranian political opposition party that I think was set up shop in Iraq for a while, and then they got kicked out of there and wound up in Albania. And they essentially operate a camp or a compound that is home to about 3,000 party members. And, you know, we've been covering a lot of these attacks. Like, Iran gets hacked a lot, right? Like, it was just in light of this stuff happening, we're just thinking, gee, Iran does get hacked a lot by quite a lot of people, you know? The Israelis are always hacking them. Now the MEK is always hacking them. You know, the United States is probably hacking them as well, but just doing it less publicly. But, you know, with a lot of these hack and leaks, like the one against the Iranian president's office and the CCTV system in Iran and whatever, in Tehran, you know, the first you would hear about any of this stuff was via the MEK.
Yeah.
Which made us sort of think, look, the MEK's fingerprints are all over this. Now, whether or not they're just, you know, facilitating the publication of this data, or whether or not they're actually more deeply involved, like, I don't know. But it has been annoying the Iranians something awful, right? So they wound up launching a whole bunch of DDoS attacks against Albanian government services and whatnot. I think even wipers and stuff as well. Albania wound up severing all diplomatic ties with Iran in September last year. Yep. So, you know, this has been a big thing. Now, Albanian authorities have actually raided the MEK camp to seize computers to collect evidence of MEK attacks against Iranian targets, which is a really interesting situation when you've got Albania hosting this political party that is in opposition to the regime in a country that you have no diplomatic relations with, right? Like, but you still have to kind of stop this activity emanating from within your borders. And this is what I find just so fascinating about this story is the Albanians need to put a stop to this to sort of assert their sovereignty in a way. You know, it's not about helping Iran. It's just that you can't have this.
No, that's right. And from an Albanian point of view, it's just about protecting yourself. Like, it's kind of uncomfortable, I think, to stop anti-Iran activity, given that Iran has attacked you.
Yes.
But I think they've got no other choice.
That's right.
It feels that, the best case was probably actually 5 years ago. If Albania had known that this was happening, they could have put a stop to it then and the whole situation's averted. Now, I bet you that Iran probably didn't go to the Albanians and say, hey, I think there's people operating out of this camp. Can I get some lawful assistance?
Well, yeah, because the Albanians would probably treat that sort of information with a great deal of suspicion.
Yeah, exactly. So it just kind of escalates into this mess, really.
Yeah.
I suppose the other thing is that taking action against the MEK is undesirable, but you just have to do it because otherwise it'll get worse and worse.
Now, what will get worse and worse, right? Because are you talking about escalating Iranian attacks on Albanian infrastructure?
Yeah.
You know, that's part of it. But I think there's just the principle of it as well, which is that, you know, you do kind of have to assert your sovereignty. And, you know, if you're a nation of laws, if you want to, you know, but then you contrast that to Russia, right? Which just like, as long as you're not hacking stuff in Russia or the countries allied to Russia, then you could be a cyber criminal in Russia without too much drama, right? So they're not too concerned with exerting their sovereignty when it comes to this sort of stuff, but Albania is. I just find the whole thing, I think this is like one of the most interesting things to happen in, you know, cyber conflict in quite a while. And it's not really getting all that much attention. But yeah, I just find the whole thing fascinating.
I think it's interesting in that in one sense, what the MEK is doing is just cyber crime. And so it sort of shines
a
light.
I mean, hack and leak for political purposes isn't cybercrime, is it?
No, it's not. But I guess what I'm saying is that it's the same sort of stuff. But what has happened is it's reached the point where a state really cares. A lot of states don't care or don't have the capacity to actually do anything with it. So part of the problem of global enforcement is that it's just hard to get other states to do things. And yeah. So this is an interesting situation where what would be, not that remarkable has escalated into an international incident. And so I think there's a sort of interesting space in the, you know, what would be the way to solve this? What would have been the way to head it off at the pass? And it would have been Iran saying, we have reasons to believe it's the MEK, and Albania actually doing something about it many years ago. Now, whether Albania...
Well, did they start many years ago, though?
I think they started... The earliest I can find is last year.
Yeah.
Right.
So starting 5 years ago, I mean, unless they had a, you know, crystal ball, might have been a bit difficult, Tom, is my point.
You've caught me exaggerating.
I think they've moved relatively quickly. Like the most high-profile MEK-related, hacking activity, or the stuff that they seem to be first to report, I mean, that is pretty recent. So,
yeah, but I suppose it's hard to know how much this overlaps with the Iranian attacks on Albania just in the first place.
Yeah.
Right. Is this a motivation for Iran, or is this, you know, just an extra factor? Iran attacked Albania a couple of times last year, and I think the first time was in July, which I believe is before the first MEK action?
Oh, there was some reason for that. I can't remember. It was because the MEK had some sort of party it was a conference or something. Yeah. But the whole thing's a mess. And you just sort of think, so what I want to know, right, is say you've seized these devices, you've got evidence that these MEK members are committing crimes against Iran. What do you do with them?
My personal answer is nothing. Yeah. You tell them to knock it off.
But they won't.
Well,
and so what do you do, right?
I think like then you arrest them.
You can't deport them to Iran, right, because they're going to face persecution. How do you charge them with committing a crime in Iran when they're in Albania? I mean, maybe there's some legal mechanism there, but, you know, it's not a good look to be throwing dissidents, Iranian dissidents, that are being hosted in your country in prison, is my point. So I think this situation as, you know, this is just the first part. Like, I just wonder where it goes from here.
Yeah, I think it will continue to be a mess. I think that they, if they keep going, they'll arrest them and they'll figure it out. And I think there's, in a way, no choice in that it's bigger than just what's occurring in the camp now. It's you know, between two states, and Albania can't just let it continue happening for its own interests.
Yeah, no, agree. All right, Tom Uren, thank you very much for the discussion and the excellent work on the newsletter this week, my friend. And we'll do it all again next week. Cheers.
Thanks, Pat. See ya.